The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we slide into a Wednesday, Gary, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, and all set to go. We've got so much to talk about. Boy, that Michael Wolf story, you know, about the book coming out, really ended quickly.
I was just
going through most different websites out there. I'm like, the story's gone.
Well, often when there's like a claim in a book, and we'll get into it in a bit, but often when there's a claim in a book and it doesn't look or feel like the claim has anything backing it, then often that's the case. You know, so many books over the years, political books that have been written, where there's a claim, you know, bombshell, a new bombshell in the book, and then all of a sudden it kind of falls away. And that would make sense, because the story, like you said, it was just like all of a sudden, boom, and then it didn't really have legs, you know, later in the day.
I woke up to it. By the time I went to sleep in the afternoon,
yeah,
it had, for all intents and purposes, disappeared.
Right.
And that's after, and we're talking about the Michael Wolff book that says there was actually a document that was listing three possibilities for indicting President Trump with obstruction of justice.
Right.
And the Guardian saying that they had, you know, they had seen the documents. Then Mueller's office came out and said, absolutely false, that document doesn't exist. Now, the interesting thing is, and the analysis of it, well, is there another document? Is that the wrong document? But are there documents that actually, do exist? First thing I thought when I saw that, and because when I woke up, the accusation was out, the response was already in from Mueller, his spokesperson. It was already out that quickly.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, Mueller will never testify in public now.
Right, right.
Because you know where this is going. Any type of accusation that anybody makes will now be tied to Mueller. And I do think that as you can only have a boogeyman for so long, except for Trump.
Right. But, yeah, that lasts forever. Yeah.
But, you know, you keep moving on to somebody else. Well, you've gone after Barr. That really hasn't stuck. So the next person would be Mueller. You get him out in public, and you tell me there's not going to be a Democrat stating in Michael Wolff's book, it was said that you had written up, that part of your team had written up in instructions for obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm.
Your spokesperson said that document doesn't exist. Did other documents exist, or was it something that was brought up by other members of your team?
And they start getting into the splitting of hairs and the definition of what is, you know, and that's, you're absolutely right, because that's the first thing I saw or thought myself. Because his spokesman says, Mueller's spokesman says, the document doesn't exist. Oh, wait a minute. But does a document exist?
Yes.
I mean, if you're sitting in front of whatever committee, Democrats grilling you, because they're really upset that there was no indictment on obstruction. There was no suggestion of indictment. Obviously that's why, you know, Nadler's going the way he's going. If they had something, if there's anything at all, any kind of document that exists that discusses obstruction, I could see a Democrat saying, well, that's false. You said that a document doesn't exist. Well, we said that the document that you're talking about in that story doesn't exist.
Right.
But you start splitting those hairs, and then all of a sudden, they're going to go after Mueller. Mueller is the bad guy.
Does another document exist? And this is why I believe that Mueller won't testify, because I do believe that there is a possibility, maybe not a document, maybe it was notes, but I do believe, and we've said this from the very beginning, that part of Mueller's team was attempting to stretch out the definition of obstruction of justice. So they might have had that discussion, and there might be notes on it. And then if you get to that point of proving that there were actually notes that were written that was not in the 448-page Mueller report, then Mueller is going to be accused of hiding and not full transparency, and then Mueller will be demonized, and then the entire, because this is eventually what you have to get to if you're a Democrat, and then the whole Mueller report should be thrown out and a new investigation started again, which justifies Gerald Nadler's investigation.
Right.
So everybody on the Trump team must testify or we're going to go after them.
Yes, because while that document didn't exist, another one did exist, and we think that document, because they came up, remember, right after the full report, I mean, you know, the redacted, but, you know, not the summary, but the report was issued. What did they say? It was Nadler and Schiff that kept saying, well, clearly there's obstruction here, and clearly there was collusion. They kept saying that as if it were a matter of fact, and it wasn't. It wasn't shown, but that they didn't care. They kept saying it as if the report said it. You know, the collusion and we're right. going to pursue more on the collusion. There was no collusion. And the obstruction, we're going to pursue the obstruction. There was no obstruction. So they can easily take from this. They're going to look to find something to go on and then dismiss Mueller as the bad guy. Well, you didn't do a job. You didn't do the job we hired you to do. And this is a failure. And it's clear that all of this here adds up to obstruction. We can see that. We know what you were considering. And it gets back into the whole thought thing, remember, on obstruction. And who was it? Was it Dershowitz that made the point that had they pursued that, they, you know, the whole idea of thinking of firing, or were you thinking about obstruction or whatever it is, what were you thinking at that time? I could see them using that against Mueller. Well, you were thinking about drawing up the documents. You drew up other documents. You wrote down the word obstruction in this document. And you were just afraid to go after a sitting president and blah, blah, blah. I could see that being the case. If I'm Mueller, I'm saying, nope, I'm not going to get in front of this circus. Not going to do it, because there's no way to win. There is no way for Mueller to win. The only win for him is to leave it where it is now. If he gets in front of it, it will be a circus. I mean, if he jumps out and decides, okay, I'll testify, even behind closed doors, you have Nadler saying, well, the entire script would be, you know, well, what's the point of him going behind closed doors? He doesn't want to, if Mueller doesn't want to testify on camera, out in the open, in public, then, and you're saying, okay, we would let him testify behind closed doors. This was last week or the week before, but we'll release the entire script.
We're speculating based on what the behavior of the Democrats have been.
They wish,
because they have no other path to go down, to stretch this thing out as long as possible, and they keep moving the goalposts. I believe that the goalpost eventually must be moved to the fact of discrediting the entire Mueller investigation. Otherwise, you don't go anywhere. Nobody's really hitting bar the last couple of days, because where do you go on this? I mean, you got Comey, and we'll get to that coming up here in a little bit, Comey panicking and saying that Trump is peddling dumb lies. That in itself was amazing yesterday, because I thought to myself, wow, we've just reversed everything. From just a couple of months ago, where Trump was saying, look, this is a witch hunt and a bunch of lies. And now Comey's out there saying that what's going on with Trump is a bunch of dumb lies. I just wonder whether Comey and Brennan, whether we're going to hear them come out and say, we're all part of a witch hunt. This whole thing could be completely and totally reversed. By the way, it doesn't matter. It didn't matter whether Trump objected. It doesn't matter whether Comey objected.
Right.
Those are simply behaviors of two individuals, as we have said all along. A lot of people put, well, you know, Trump was complaining, so Comey's complaining, so they're both justified because they found nothing on Trump. No. What the person who is if you wish to call both a suspect. How the suspect or the target.
Yeah, right.
How the target responds means nothing. It's the evidence. It's connecting the dots with evidence that matters. So we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit, but that's the first thing that I thought was, oh, wow, after Michael Wolff's book and Mueller coming out and denying it immediately almost. I mean, that was very quick. Then as far as I just thought to myself, I said, I can't see him testifying, and I think he may object to testifying in private, because Jared Lander came out and said, oh, no, if he testifies in private, the full text will be out there to the public.
Right.
And he might just say, even though the video does make a difference, because that's where the tone comes out. It's tougher to tell the tone through a transcript.
Right, yes.
Video.
Right. Inflection, right. Yeah.
If a picture tells 1,000 words, then video tells 1,000,000 words.
Well, because there could be a pause by whoever's being questioned, whoever's testifying. Sometimes they pause, and they might, you know, kind of turn their head or maybe slightly roll their eyes or try and rephrase, as they're trying to rephrase or come up with the answer, essentially, to any given question. And that has to be considered, especially in a case like this. But my question is, do the Democrats believe what's in Wolf's book? Number one. And number two, does it matter?
Yeah.
If they don't have to believe it, they can use it. Nadler, I could see him using this claim that the obstruction documents, you know, were drawn up. And going on it and saying no, we trust it.
I can see some Democrat coming out and stating, Mr. Mueller, I don't believe you. I think you couldn't make the decision because part of your team wanted to have obstruction of justice, and maybe that document doesn't exist, but I bet you notes exist or conversations were had to charge this president with obstruction of justice, and you are not being transparent to this committee.
Yes. Right.
I can see that happening.
Oh, yeah,
And in order to keep this thing stretched out, you have to go after, you eventually, and you and I said this a couple of weeks ago, it seems like you'd eventually have to go after Mueller. Because Mueller is the one,
yes,
who actually, you're eventually,
right,
going to have to, if you're the Democrats, you're eventually going to have to look at the Mueller report and say, we have to destroy this.
I think that's already in play. And I think, you know, part of that back and forth is Nadler saying, well, if he testifies behind closed doors, we'll release the transcript. And that's basically him telling Mueller, okay, great, we'll grant you the wish of testifying behind closed doors, but we're going to make sure we make it public. Very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's at play right now. And they're trying to, you know, essentially, they're trying to lure him in to testifying, and then it's all about the grill. I mean, it's summertime, get the grill out, and he's going to be the one that's the bad guy now. He's going to be the one, you know, Trump. They didn't get their way, so he's going to be the bad guy.
I'm going to see the Democrats coming out and saying the whole Mueller investigation was a complete sham.
Yep.
We need to start all over again,
right,
with Gerald Nadler and the Democrat committee going after this president, who we now believe, because the Mueller investigation was a complete sham, colluded with the Russians to hack the election and also committed obstruction of justice to hide his collusion. Adam Schiff will come out and say, I've always had the evidence.
Yes, exactly.
I've always had the evidence, yes, that collusion existed. It's what other path can they go down?
Well, imagine Mueller sitting there in a moment and, whoever's questioning him. Blah, 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 obstruction. Well, yes, I mean, we did consider obstruction. Boom. There's your soundbite. And there's your headline. Every liberal major media would go with those words.
And then,
even though it's out of context, he would follow up,
right,
with saying, but of course, we could not determine that with any kind of evidence, and we could not move to the point of indicting because there was no hard evidence in this case, but yes, we did consider it. They won't put all of the quote in there. They'll use it to their advantage.
Mueller is Trump's stooge.
Yes.
I'm not kidding.
That's what would
come out afterwards.
And if he doesn't testify, they'll go after him the same,
right,
way. He's,
yep,
hiding something.
Yep. Yeah. I thought there was going to be full transparency here.
Right. Yep. He's hiding something.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Front Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Also coming up on the show, the best headline of the day, the Supreme Court non-decisions, a cease and desist order issued on the private border wall.
Okay.
Now, the interesting thing is, first thing, when we saw it the other day, I mean, obviously, it was, if it's a private border wall, it's being built on private land.
Right.
And so I asked the question jokingly. He must have got quick approval from the HOA.
Right.
Apparently, they didn't get a permit from the town to build it.
Ouch. You need those.
So you
need your permits.
I'm like, really? Wow, I was actually sort of onto something yesterday.
Yeah.
Apparently,
right.
They didn't get a permit to build it. So we'll get to that. James Comey panicking. We'll tell you about the Ohio weatherman who snaps at viewers who are upset that the tornado coverage superseded The Bachelor.
Yeah.
That was interesting. I just have to bring this up because this was huge on social media yesterday. Old people climbing Everest.
Okay. You and I were talking about it off the air, and I said to you, you know, they've had 11 deaths this climbing season so far.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, a number of them are guys that were over the age of 50.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm always intrigued about anything Everest. You know, I read a lot about it. I watch documentaries and the whole thing, and it's intriguing to me. I'm never going to try and climb it, but I've seen expert after expert. Even in one documentary, they said, you know, well, we really discourage people who are over the age of 50 because your body just isn't up to, you know, acclimating the same way. And I just don't know what the trend is with these individuals that are, you know, in our age group.
Was it the bucket list movie?
I guess so. Well, there was one guy actually that died recently, and he had a goal of you know, summiting each of the highest peaks on each of the seven continents, and the last one was Everest. And he died after summiting Everest.
Yeah, I'm in pretty good shape. I'd never even attempt something like that.
There's no way. Yeah, no. And you can be in the best of shape and still your body doesn't tolerate it for whatever reason. You could be a seasoned climber, you know, and altitude sickness take you down just kind of out of the blue. I'm intrigued by people in that age group.
Are there
to do that.
Also coming up, are there indicators in the market that there might be a slowdown in the economy? Is that what the market is seeing right now? We'll get to that. Plus, Taylor Swift promises to get political in her music.
Okay. All right. Well,
we may not talk about that.
I'm going to boycott Taylor Swift music.
I just had to add that. So will I.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
It's been an incredible stretch of severe weather for especially the nation's heartland, where over 300 tornadoes in the past 2 weeks have been reported. The setup today is still in place to see hail, high winds, potential severe thunderstorms from Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, down through northern Texas, where we'll see a pretty good likelihood for severe thunderstorms in and around the Dallas area. Earlier this year, some of the weather destruction came as a result of flooding, especially in the northern plains. With that flow moving downstream, we don't need any more rain for Arkansas, where the Arkansas River has crested in some areas. In and around Little Rock, there are reports of folks being on standby for evacuations. New York City today will see a high of 77 with a chance of showers. Chicago, thunderstorms and 70. Dallas, 85 with thunderstorms through the day. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
pockets of civilization, you can listen live on our app, in your app store, or RedEyeRadioShow.com. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, this is one of those things that I just want to bring up here just for a couple of moments, because to me, it's so obvious what's going on, but then I read what's going on in the media and realize, okay, we do have to address it. And because it's back up again, you know, the whole concept that Donald Trump, because of, you know, what he said in Japan about, you know, Joe Biden and everything else, that he aligns himself with a dictator, saying he's not worried about, you know, Kim Jong-un and the missiles. This is, again, aligning himself with a dictator. This is all hogwash.
Mm.
You may disagree with, you may be somebody out there who disagrees with how Donald Trump negotiates. For example, we have looked at how he has handled the whole trade thing. We believe the administration and the president has handled it wrong. They may be attempting to handle it right now, which is to unite the free world against China. But we thought the president handled, so we have no problem stating when we believe the president has handled a negotiation wrong. We have no problem with that at all. The jury is still out on foreign policy, but there's no way that you can make the argument on the substance of foreign policy with this president and compare him to the last president and say that this president is in any way a friend of a dictator, of dictators. You may disagree with his negotiating style, which at times can make us even cringe. But I understand what he's trying to do. I think I understand what he's trying to do. But in no way the substance of what he is attempting to accomplish. You can't look at what he is attempting to accomplish. And I'll say the same thing on the economy, even though I disagree at times with what he does. I understand that he wants a great economy.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's wrong on a few ways to get there. But it's not that he has said, whether when it's come to the economy of the United States or whether it comes to foreign relations, that I want the United States to be more like the dictators over there. That's ridiculous.
Right.
If you look at how he's handled Iran, how tough he's been on Iran, the stances that he's taken on the Middle East in support of Israel, the hard line that he has taken on Russia, and what he's attempting to do right now, which I believe I may come back a year from now and say with North Korea, you know, okay, sorry, wrong way, but we tried it.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious. He's made it clear in this case. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to do it this way.
Right.
I'm going to try to, with a dictator, I'm going to play extremely, extremely nice right now, even though behind the scenes they know what's going on. But publicly, I'm not going to attempt to destroy the negotiations by criticizing a murderous regime.
Mm-hmm.
He has made that decision. Could end up being the wrong decision. But to take it the step further, to say that, he is okay with what goes on in North Korea and he supports dictatorships, is ridiculous. If you want a policy that supported terrorism, if you want that financed and supported terrorism, all you have to do is go to Obama's deal with Iran.
Mm.
You can look at that, and anything that Trump has done is actually leading to the opposite of what Obama did in Iran. And if you don't recognize that, you're just being a political hack. You and I've said we've cringed at some of the things, but we think we know what he's doing. That he's trying to nice his way. I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be nice. Be nice until you don't have to be nice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do we know when it's not time to be nice?
You'll know.
Because I'll tell you.
You know, there are a couple of things here.
By the way, does anybody know what movie that's from?
Well, yeah. So the first approach was Little Rocket Man. By the way,
right?
Not the Elton John movie. His nickname for Kim Jong-un. We got to be careful here because people get confused. And that was, oh my gosh, he's taunting him. We're all going to wake up to a mushroom cloud. Remember that?
Yes.
And now it's, oh my gosh, he's getting in bed with him. We're all going to wake up to a mushroom cloud. But what I believe is going on, I think, behind the scenes, away from the president, well, away from the president's words, not away from the president. Shh, don't tell the president. I believe what you're seeing is the greatest level possible to an absurd extent, quite possibly, of diplomacy in order to demonstrate clearly to the world that if it comes to it, a preemptive strike, if we believe that he is going to, Kim Jong-un is going to launch a missile at South Korea or anywhere in that region or anywhere else in the world, that we are fully justified in, because we have vetted this situation to the fullest. We have made every offer. We have extended the olive branch numerous times. We tried to make this work, and there should be no question with anybody, any other power in the world. But the greatest concern, of course, would be China. China doesn't want, number one, they don't want a bunch of refugees from North Korea in the event of a fall in terms of the power of Kim Jong-un. They just don't want that. They just simply don't want to take that on. However, beyond that, of course, is us using force in that region obviously becomes a very delicate situation. And so, again, I think it's a matter of demonstrating to the world that we have extended diplomacy to the fullest, and we now are at the point, well, again, if it comes to that, of a preemptive strike.
And you and I have asked that question. Is that what it is? Is it not just selling it to Kim Jong-un, but it's selling it to the rest of the world that I bent over backwards in order to try to strike a deal with North Korea, and they, you know, and Little Rocket Man then at that point, refused to do it. Obviously, it's a negotiating ploy. If anybody has seen Trump operate, you know that it is. But if you want to make the comparison, when you look at the things that he has done, getting us out of the Iran deal, when you think about that what Obama did with John Kerry, think about this, where they said, okay, let us unfreeze their assets, the hundreds of billions of dollars, and give Iran the ability to finance terrorism worldwide in a horrible nuclear deal that we couldn't necessarily verify everything that we needed to verify, to try to make the case that Trump is somehow in bed with dictators or terrorists or whatever is so beyond any scope of reality, especially when you compare him to the last president.
Yeah, right. And you still have, the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, saying, we should talk to Iran. I believe in further talks with Iran. Nope, you guys tried that. And plus, gave them their money back and enabled them with hundreds of billions of dollars. That's not going to happen. John Kerry's been vocal in recent months about it still. And this is, it is beyond absurd. When you ask the American people, remember the poll? Ask the American people, do you think Congress should make a deal like the deal we made with Iran instead of the president? And they said yes. This was just after Trump became president. Well, what do you think of Trump pulling the deal and leaving it up to Congress? Oh, no, 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 no.
Right.
If Trump's name was involved, it immediately became something different. The fact of the matter is that if our representatives want to make a deal with Iran, go ahead. They can, that's in their house. That's not, we don't want them doing it, but that's in their house. That is not an executive branch role. They don't just get to, based on a decision, make a deal with Iran, handing over hundreds of billions of dollars. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, so you know, when I, and I've always said this, and again, everything you... I got asked in Florida, where do you think Trump will go down in history? One of the greatest presidents? And I go, that's not my job. I don't do that.
Right.
I don't rate, you know, and it was because of the whole John Voight thing. Greatest president since Lincoln.
Right.
People says, what do you think about that? I said, well, if he wishes to play historian, that's fine. I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I look and say, okay, what's a president doing now? I leave that up to the historians. I leave that up to history. That's not what I do. And so I look at somebody and I say, are they, you know, what's the substance of what they're doing? But overall with Trump, foreign policy is where I've been most comfortable with him.
Right.
Even though there's things I've disagreed with him on. And at times I sit back and go, I wouldn't do that. Okay, we'll see what happens. Because I don't know what's going on behind the scenes and neither does anybody else. Mm-hmm. You just don't know. And Trump will be judged eventually by what he does. Look, it's the substance of the Iran deal. It's not the fact that the Obama administration had negotiations with Iran. It's the conclusion and the stinky deal that they came up with.
Right.
That enabled and emboldened the biggest terrorist regime in the world. So it's not the negotiations. It's not just what you say. It's what the kind of deal and what happens in the end. And all the steps from beginning to completion. And it's still, Trump's still a work in progress. But so far, I've been most comfortable with foreign policy with this president, which really is one of the biggest responsibilities of the president to begin with.
Mm, right. And honestly, again, I'm with you on that. And we had some criticism, you know, we had questions, really. Syria, the drawdown there, which wasn't a complete drawdown.
And end up not being a complete drawdown.
Yeah.
No, he changed his mind.
You know, but going after ISIS in Afghanistan with massive weapons, going after ISIS in Syria. You know, again, while that wasn't the face of the mission, going after those groups in Syria certainly had a great effect of that situation. Only time will tell. I mean, this goes back to the whole Voight comment. I have no idea what I'll be saying when I'm 90, God willing, about the current president. We did say potentially with the China trade deal, if they get the right trade deal. Look, this is, by the way, notice all the contingencies here built into this statement. We could see this as a pivotal point in terms of the communist society, the communist regime in China long term, but let's get there first and then let's get to 30 years down the road and see if it actually did do what we said it had the potential of doing.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. That's just, I've been complaining about that lately, that there are just some things that are so obvious that I'll see in the news. I'm like, I don't care. It's so obvious. And it's realized, oh, wait a minute, no, we should address it on the air. It's just we've gone through it so many times, and that's one of them that heated up over the last couple of days was Trump becoming friendly with dictators again. No, he's not.
No.
He's negotiating in his own way, which is different than any other president that's ever existed.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the thing with China, and if we're to believe what was happening behind the scenes, that the negotiations were falling apart because China saw all of those positive messages from the president as weakness,
yes.
Right? I think it's likely that, and they're great at, you know, communists are great at propaganda
yes.
Right? But I think it's more likely that they were looking for an out because they realized the impact of changing their laws and what it could do. And then they just use that as an excuse. No, we think we can get more, and we think the president is weak here. could be all the above. Like a communist needs an excuse to walk away from a negotiation. I'm sorry, I was using logic. Never mind.
Especially on free trade.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, I think it is the tactic of the president. It's likely been a lifelong tactic in business that he has used, trying to do everything he can to stay friendly with those that he is negotiating. And then from there, if it doesn't turn out well, then you move on. If I hear Pompeo come out and issue a concern about the president's approach, I might be a little bit worried. But I believe behind the scenes, we all know what's going on. They're making every effort at diplomacy here.
This is Red Eye Radio.
What?
On Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across the world and America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. A lot of news out there. Expect if it continues this way for gasoline prices to continue to drop. And then after the summer blends, who knows what's going to happen by the time. If we get out of the summer driving season and we still have the growing inventories in the United States, I guess almost now as great as they were 2 years ago.
Right.
And you still have U.S. production no matter what. They may not be making the profit per, you know, per gallon of gasoline or per barrel of crude oil sold, but they're still making money, and there seems to be no end to the U.S. production, which, again, I guess is coming to fruition here. I think I saw oil down 11% now since its high mark in April. Stockpiles rising 8.5%. Is this worldwide? This is in the United States.
Right.
In the first 4.5 months of the year, according to government data, that pace would be the quickest such rate in 3 years if it holds through the end of May. The last time inventories climbed to this pace in early 2016, oil dipped below $27 a barrel, hitting its lowest level in more than a decade. As U.S. production and anxiety about the world economy both surge, few analysts expect a similar price drop this year, but many remain cautious after oil tumbled from a multi-year high of $76 into the low 40s in the fourth quarter of last year. Remember how low gas prices were at that point.
Right, right.
You know what's not good about this?
What's that?
If gas prices start dropping.
Mm-hmm.
And they drop drastically by fall.
Right.
I don't want Trump then to say, oh, good, gas prices have fallen a lot. Now it's time to raise gas tax for the infrastructure program. Let's get back on track with that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen this year. I'm guessing that McConnell's shut that down behind the scenes.
One would hope so.
Yeah, you would hope.
Steady U.S. production and softening refinery consumption have pushed up stockpiles in 7 of the 9 weeks through May 17th. According to the Energy Information Administration, inventories are at their highest level since July of 2017. Figures for the week ending May 24th will be released this Thursday. Recent increases have surprised some analysts because stockpiles typically fall at this time of the year, as fuel makers take in more crude ahead of the summer driving season that lifts fuel consumption. A combination of refinery outages and maintenance along with recent flooding has contributed to weaker demand, analysts say, making it hard to discern whether higher stockpiles are the result of some of those issues or actually signaling excess supply. It's definitely caught me off guard, said Andy Libro, a senior partner at Commodity Research Group. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. Nagging issues have prevented refiners from getting close to capacity.
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah, there's also concern right now in the markets and, you know, in the trading of oil that a long-term trade war would slow the economy.
Yes.
In a slower economy, you consume the consuming public slows all spending. So that would be one of those items that would drop. We'll see where at, you know, We talked about it briefly yesterday, but I have no idea in terms of how long this trade war with China could go. You know, the more you think about something very fundamental about them changing their laws as a nation in order to make this thing happen, I don't know where the incentive for China is to do that, because you can say, okay, it improves their economy. It would greatly improve their economy, but are they willing to give that up, or willing to give up communism more and more for this huge surge in the economy? Because if you do, if they can't control that kind of economic growth, they can't control the more powerful voice. I mean, it really is empowering the people in China when an economy is expanding.
Well, since the United States gets 80%, this is a story that's come out the last couple of days, of rare earth elements from China.
Mm-hmm.
China's looking to use that now.
Right.
You know, that's come out over the last couple of days. Now, could the United States find it elsewhere? Yes, but for a much increased cost. The global bond yields, that story out yesterday, falling to multi-year lows, usually an indicator of concern that the global economic growth is slowing here.
Right.
You know, worldwide, which means it would be slowing in the United States. We've talked about the indicators before, and we had often said that when the tariffs were put into effect, when you would most likely see that the effect of the tariffs, even though the steel and aluminum tariffs were lifted, the fact of the effect that had in first quarter investment would most likely, as we said, you would most likely start seeing it in the first and second quarters of this year, mm-hmm. is when you most likely would see the effect of it. So we shall see, but there seems to be indicators coming out every day that aren't as positive as I would like them to be.
Right. Yep.
And we'll see where it goes from this point. Supreme Court in action yesterday, as we saw on a few issues, just, you know, really not going anywhere. I wasn't surprised what you saw in the abortion case.
No, if you look at the abortion case, this is the Indiana abortion law. You have a couple of provisions that were key and were being decided on at the Supreme Court, the second of which was not decided on its merits just yet. But that first provision basically is the idea that the fetal remains after an abortion should be buried or cremated. And that's what the law states. And the Supreme Court actually overturned that from the lower court and decided with the state on that and said that it does not, that provision of the law does not block anyone, prohibit anyone, or make it more difficult for anyone to get an abortion. The other side of that was the non-discrimination provision, which bars abortions based on disability, sex, or race of the fetus. So far, it's left to the lower court, but the Supreme Court said the highest court did not decide on the merit of that provision just yet. Essentially, that's going to have to make its way through the courts, and they may decide that down the road. But if you look at that, and this was a bill, by the way, that was signed into law by then Governor Mike Pence, who's now the VP. If you look at that, it's exactly what we said earlier on abortion. The state was saying on this non-discrimination provision, a life is a life. So you can't pick and choose based on any of these items. It's either yay or nay. You can't say based on this, you know, like a disability.
Right, right.
If there's indication that that Down syndrome is present, a life is a life. Now, I'd have to get into the law itself from the state law from Indiana to see, okay, but what if they don't say? You know, again, there are many different things here, which I think is in part why the highest court decided not to rule on that just yet. They're going to, you know, wait and on the merits of that. And so far, they're not ruling on it. I wonder if they ever do. I'm not sure. Depends on how far it goes.
Well, we had said this across the board with the states doing it, that eventually they're going to have to decide, especially with, you know, the new technology. And you were telling me that technology appeared in the brief from Justice Thomas.
Right. Yeah. And this was, I think, something that the state in arguing its case here. You know, when they were dealing with the non-discrimination provision, the state explained, there is a response to new technology that allows women to make a choice not contemplated at the time of Roe v. Wade. The choice of, which child to bear. So I thought it was really interesting, after the U.S., Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit upheld the district court's ruling. This is from Amy Howe at SCOTUS blog. Indiana argued the Supreme Court to take up the case, telling the justices that the federal fetal remains provisions expands on long established legal and cultural traditions of recognizing the dignity of humanity of the fetus. The highest court agreed in their decision, and then the non-discrimination the non-discrimination provision, the state explained, as a response to the new technology that allows women to make a choice not contemplated at the time of Roe v. Wade.
Well, you know, we had said before when the states did it, we said everybody's off on a tangent topic. The eventual topic will come back to the Supreme Court again when, right. I don't know. Might not be in my lifetime. I don't know.
Right.
But I do believe that it will eventually come back to the point of, because you saw the justice talking about viability. What does that mean?
Right.
You know, viability. Well, is viability when life it begins? Is that what you're stating the legal definition is from Roe v. Wade? Well, does that hold water in 2018? In 2019? Does viability hold the same legal context in our culture? You know, when you saw that the polling came out that the majority of Americans agreed, the vast majority of Americans agreed with the heartbeat bill. Oh, yeah, that's a great, you know, that's a great place when the heartbeat begins. It's not what Roe v. Wade says. And so the you know, again, we have culture and not necessarily science that has been dictating this, which is why it's bad law, because it's bad law because, and Thomas said this again yesterday, nowhere in the Constitution does the right to abortion exist.
Right.
It's not in there.
Yeah, that's, in fact, the quote here from Thomas, noting that he, quote, would have thought it would go without saying that nothing in the Constitution or any decision of this court prevents a state from requiring abortion facilities to provide for the respectful treatment of human remains.
Well,
on that provision,
the debate back and forth between Ginsburg and this got a lot of play on social media, where, you know, she brought up, you know, well, you're not a mother because you said, you know, the mother of an aborted. Well, you're not a mother. Mm-hmm. Well, that gets to the debate right there, where Thomas believes, look, I believe the definition of when it's life is wrong. Mm-hmm. And Ginsburg saying, no, it's not a life because you can't be a mother if it's not a life. And so the last thing that she's going to agree with is Thomas saying that you'd be the mother of an aborted child. Well, you can't be a mother if it's never a child to begin with. I mean, that's where it gets down to. But it's important to note that distinction, because that's what the debate will be.
Yeah.
And that's the debate of where I believe the abortion law will change in this country eventually, as science, as you know, and like I said, you see it in the culture when you actually ask the question, as we have, as people find out more about science, they go, I don't know. And it looks like, okay, yeah. Is it, you know, what does viability mean? Okay, for a lot of us, it means heartbeat now.
Right.
And so you've already moved the scale in, you know, in the public's eye, as to, and by the way, that's what both sides are trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The pro-life side's trying to keep moving it in that particular direction and convincing people, look, this is a human life.
Mm-hmm.
And now to the point of convincing the majority of Americans that the heartbeat is a life, which moves from Roe v. Wade.
Right. Yes. Yeah, it's
it moves the goalposts from Roe v. Wade,
right.
You know, now to the actual heartbeat for the majority of Americans, and that's the goal here, because science and what the culture believes science tells us,
mm-hmm,
is what, right, will eventually decide abortion, which will come down to when is a life a life. And once you decide that, as you and I said, And we got blasted on did you, I don't know if you saw it on Twitter when we said this before, because we got blasted on Twitter saying the guys on Red Eye are promoting punishing women that are victims of rape and incest, which of course is not the case. We were simply stating a legal fact that once a life is a life, where life begins, the entire thing of rape and incest will be gone.
Mm-hmm.
You can determine what that is. We're simply saying, as a legal point, you can make that determination as to whether that is punishing the woman or punishing the child.
Right.
Because if you say that's punishing the woman, well, what about the life? Well, you don't believe it's a life. At that point, when the United States comes to that decision that it is a life, at that, you know, for example, at conception, if they make that ruling that that's when life is a life,
mm-hmm,
then there will be no other questions. No other questions even matter, except the concept of what's more important, the life of the one human life or the life of the mother.
Right.
That will be the one deciding, and that probably will not happen in our lifetime, but I notice how quickly the left was perverting what we were stating on the air. Oh, those guys want to punish a woman who was raped. I can't believe the inhumanity of them. Of course, that's not what we're stating.
I think it's interesting that when you look at the essentially the denial to issue a ruling on that provision, on the one provision, the discrimination provision, it is interesting that they said so far the arguments haven't been made in court. All the legal arguments have to be made first, and that's when we'll take it up.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. All drivers know that finding secure parking spots is an increasing problem. Let's consider ways to win the parking battle, like pre-planning when and where you will stop. Download a truck parking app that helps identify available spaces. Start your day earlier and grab spots before they're filled. Find a well-lit area, like a truck stop or a department store lot, if allowed or permitted, that's less appealing to thieves. Secure your truck by closing windows. Use window screens or shades. Be sure to hide your valuables. Use anti-theft devices like a container, fifth wheel, and air brake locks, and use an in-cab camera to document suspicious activity. Staying safe and within the hours of service is important. Having a sound parking strategy helps with both. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, James Comey seems to be panicking a little bit. We'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. Trey Gowdy says James Comey is nobody to blame but himself if he's concerned about the new bar probe. That and more on the way, plus your calls and comments, 866-90 Red Eye.
Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Well, James Comey out there with the Washington Post op-ed piece. How things have changed. How things have changed. James Comey writing an op-ed piece, saying that the FBI did not spy on Trump's or any other presidential campaign. This is according to TheHill.com, a dig at Attorney General William Barr, who said last month he believed the Trump campaign was spied on. Millions of good people believe what the president of the United States says. In normal times, that's healthy, but not now. When the president is a liar who doesn't care what damage he does to the vital institutions, Comey writes, we must call out his lies that the FBI was corrupt and committed treason, that we spied on the Trump campaign and tried to defeat Donald Trump. We must constantly return to these stubborn facts. As recently as last week, Trump suggested Comey, former FBI Director Andrew McCabe, and other officials committed treason by conducting the original counterintelligence investigation into Russian interference during the 2016 presidential campaign. Trump and some Republicans have long alleged investigations were started by agents biased against the president, pointing to text messages exchanged by former FBI officials Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, both of whom worked on the original Russia investigation in which the two expressed criticisms of Trump before the election. A number of people, they have unsuccessfully tried to take down the wrong person, Trump told reporters last Thursday. In the op-ed piece, Comey describes the treason accusations as a baseless conspiracy theory, arguing that agents would have leaked the existence of the probe into the Trump campaign's links to Russia if they were intent on handing Hillary Clinton the election over him. The FBI wasn't out to get Donald Trump. It wasn't out to get Hillary Clinton. It was out to do its best to investigate serious matters while walking through the vicious political minefield. But go ahead, investigate the investigators if you must. Also, he went on to defend Peter Strzok and all that. Look, we had said this from the very beginning. To use the word treason, the president was wrong to do so.
Yeah.
There may be crimes. Treason isn't one of them.
No.
And so if you notice, Comey is focusing on where the president is incorrect. That's why we've stated many, many times before that when you argue with the left, you've got to make sure you use the right terminology. Because if you don't, if you take them, if you make a mistake, they will focus on the word instead of the spirit of what you are stating, the whole general spirit of what actually went on there. And the fact is, we said it when the president said it's treason. We said, no, by the definition of the law,
right,
the crimes that we see are not considered treason. They may be other serious crimes, but they're not treason. You may feel like you're betraying the country when you do that, or that people are betraying the country, and therefore you call it treason, but technically it is not, and that's why Comey went after the president for that.
Mm-hmm.
You had Trey Gowdy was on Fox News yesterday and was asked, what does he feel about what Comey said about President Trump and also, you know, defending the FBI and defending the investigation and defending Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. And here is his response.
I don't use the word treason. It's a crime for which you can be put to death, so I'm pretty judicious in how I use it. But Comey goes on in that op-ed to talk about the good men and women of the FBI. And there are lots of good women and men at the FBI. Most of them would never target a political campaign and hope that it lost $100 million to nothing. Most FBI agents would never belittle political supporters of someone else and say they could smell them at a Walmart. They would never promise to stop a political candidate. They would never say they were destabilizing for the country or call them an effing idiot. They would never use unverified information, give it the imprimatur of the U.S. government, and then submit it in a FISA application. But Martha, every FBI agent that was involved in 2016 did that. That was done by the FBI. So Comey has no one but to blame but himself. No one to blame but himself if he is concerned about what the investigation in 2016 may uncover. Most FBI agents wouldn't do any of what I described. Unfortunately, the ones he picked did all of that.
Yeah, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page were the people that he put in charge of that investigation. Do you sense that there is a mood in the intelligence agencies now that they are getting nervous about what the new investigation that Bill Barr has mandated might find?
It depends on whether or not they've done anything wrong. Most people who have done nothing wrong don't get nervous. I think the great irony is when I see headlines lamenting the possibility that classified information is going to be disseminated by Bill Barr. I mean, think back, Martha, in 2016 and 2017, right after Trump became president, who was disseminating the classified information? It was the New York Times and the Washington Post. That's who was sharing classified information. Nobody was concerned about it then. Bill Barr is the duly appointed, nominated, confirmed attorney general. I think that he knows enough to investigate what parts of the intelligence community did not meet our high expectations. The notion that any entity is above oversight, above review. So I agree with Comey. Let's do investigate the investigators. It'd be helpful if he were a little more objective about the... I mean, imagine the frustration, Martha, when you read the lead agent that was put on this investigation promised to stop your campaign. Can Comey not at all understand how someone may not have confidence in an investigation run by someone who talked about an insurance policy?
Yeah, but you know what he says about that, Trey? He says, oh, they're just texting. Those are his personal feelings, and people are entitled to their personal feelings. But he believes that he never let that, you know, bleed into his work at all.
Well, let me disabuse him of that. Remember at the end when they were deciding whether or not to join the Mueller team, Peter Strzok said, my concern is that there's no there, not my hope, not my joy, not my expectation. My concern is that there's no there. And then he mused that if this were leading towards impeachment, he'd be interested in it. This is a career FBI agent who's supposed to dedicate his career to investigating Russia. That was not enough for him. To investigate what Russia was doing to us was not enough for Peter Strzok. He was not interested unless it was going to lead to the political outcome of impeachment. That's about all you need to know about Peter Strzok. If it's about finding out about Russia, count him out. If it's impeachment of someone he wanted to lose $100 million to nothing, count him in.
You know, that's it. In other words, if our mission is to prove what I hope to be true. Think about that. How is that an investigative mind? That would be like saying, well, I'm only going to, you know, pursue this case if we can show that that guy committed the murder. If that's what we're out to prove, great. Otherwise, I don't want any part of it. What Trey Gowdy just demonstrated there should be so clear to everybody by now.
Look, if I'm in the middle and I'm the head of a counterintelligence investigation, and I'm in the FBI and I've never taken one course in law enforcement, mm-hmm. not one, but I know the perception of a conflict of interest can kill an investigation. And so if I'm in law enforcement and I'm investigating anything, you have, especially when I'm investigating politicians. And remember, that's what the FBI does.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI goes after politicians. The FBI goes after members of Congress who break the law. The FBI goes after mayors who break the law and governors who break the law. They are the ones. The FBI is the one who looks at political corruption where it exists, and they go after it, and they charge these people with crimes. You know as well as I do that if that's what you're looking at and you're doing a counterintelligence investigation on the president of the United States to see if he colluded with the Russians, the last thing that you would ever do is communicate with anybody that you work with professionally the things that he did with other FBI agents. Why? Because eventually, if you do go after that politician in court, that bias will be found out in exculpatory evidence. It'll be taken by the defense, and they will destroy the legitimacy of your investigation. That's why it's never done. I've never taken one course in law enforcement, and I know that. I know that you don't give your personal opinion on politics, of the particular politics of any mayor, any congressman. If you're an FBI agent and you're the lead, that's the last thing that you do. There was a confidence in the arrogance of Peter Strzok that he could do anything and say anything and still be viewed as a legit investigation, to the point of absurdity, to the point where you look at it and you say, sorry, I'm the defense lawyer looking at this. This was an absolutely biased investigation. And then everything on top of that, what Strzok was involved with, and the counterintelligence investigation, and how they got the FISA warrant, and what was used to get the FISA warrant. When you look at the entire package, that would be torn to shreds by any defense attorney.
Yes.
And Trey Gowdy knows that. He's a former prosecutor, so he knows how he thinks, and he knows how the defense thinks. And he knows why in law enforcement there are things you just don't do that are completely and totally unacceptable.
Yeah, I really wonder what's going on here. Sarah A. Carter, by the way, did a story on the Attorney General, William Barr, and some essentially preparing the intelligence community that, you know, this is going to be a huge battle. This is going to be a very big battle that's coming. So it makes you, if that is accurate and true, it makes you wonder what he has already. How do you get to that point of saying that, preparing people for that without having evidence? And we've said all along, we don't care if it's William Barr or Robert Mueller. If you're going to do an investigation, make sure you have the evidence, the hard evidence. And that's, I have to go back to what Meadows said last week. It's a matter of days, not weeks, when we're going to see something huge, essentially. He said it's going to make your hair curl.
Yeah, we'll go into part of her column that she wrote. Plus, we'll get to your calls and comments. So much to talk about. So many stories here today. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Yeah, I'm just sitting here, and we'll talk more about it coming up on the top of the hour, but just read Sarah A. Carter's column saying that the AG Barr battles intelligence community and FBI. Illegal surveillance have been going on for years. This all goes back to the FISA rebuking of the Obama administration.
Right.
Back in April of 17, that we have talked about many times before and attempted to connect the dots. And actually got a call about it last night saying you guys have been following that for a couple of years and what has happened there. And whether it's Sarah A. Carter or Joe DeGeneva, both of them have said their sources are telling them this goes back to illegal surveillance of Americans since 2012.
Okay, so again, we go back to the FISA courts. We mentioned this yesterday. This is the work that Sarah A. Carter and John Solomon did. And we have a ton of questions going back to the FISA court rebuking the Justice Department under Obama back to 2011. About what? In other words, where were those violations? What did they see as crossing the line? Specifically, what were those events? The court would have to have, at some point, made note and cited a number of events, maybe not all of them, but enough to issue that concern. And is this where they're headed? Is this where AG Barr is headed?
Well, and the point that I believe Sarah Carter and DeGeneva are making, as she puts in the article, is the fact that that's why Trump came out and said he's ordering the intelligence agencies to cooperate with Attorney General Barr because they're not. And the reason they're not is because the bureaucrats inside the intelligence agencies know how long the abuse of the FISA court system, the abuse of the FISA applications, and in general surveillance, that this has gone back, the illegal activity has gone back over a decade. Or actually, not over a decade, but back to 2012.
So this is going to, this, even though the president allowed AG Barr to declassify information, she writes, this whole thing's not going to happen without this huge fight.
Right.
Because it goes back so far. Wow.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it. As we look at what Sarah A. Carter wrote yesterday, that Attorney General Barr is battling the intel community and the FBI. Illegal surveillance have been going on for years. And this is the whole point that the president, the reason that he told Attorney General Barr that he told the intelligence agencies to cooperate with Barr is because they're not.
Right.
And the reason that they have not been, as she writes here, she said, despite President Donald Trump's order to declassify secret documents pertaining to the FBI's investigation into his campaign in 2016 came after weeks of battles between Attorney General William Barr and senior officials within the Bureau, CIA, and other agencies. Sources with knowledge told Sarah Carter, despite the president's order giving Barr authority over the declassification of documents relating to the Bureau's investigation into the Trump campaign in Russia, it won't be met without a fight, and there's a reason why. This isn't just about Trump. It's about nearly a decade of abuse inside the intelligence community and Bureau regarding Foreign Intelligence Collection Authority. Why? Because it was carried out to monitor communications of Americans inside the United States, and that the procedures meant to protect Americans were either swept up in those calls or targeted were not, or were swept up in those calls or targeted were not followed. The Fourth Amendment was under attack and abused for political purposes, say several retired intelligence sources. If the full extent of the abuse is made public, the powers granted these agencies could be scaled back and those who allegedly abuse her power could face prosecution, one former senior intelligence official said. It's something that we had talked about. Joe DiGenova said it on Fox News a couple of weeks ago when he said, look, the FISA court is also been cooperating with the attorney general. And everything that happened back then that was reported, as we go back to April 26th of 2017, when that came out, and we saw it that night. It's when Sarah A. Carter, and that's the reason we're bringing up Sarah A. Carter, and John Solomon worked for Circa, and they're the ones that broke that story way back then. And it was the actual documents, redacted documents, from the FISA court rebuking the Obama administration for not following rules and for violating Americans' constitutional rights. Our big question is, remember, this is a source story here, so when we read a source story, we ask the questions. We don't make assumptions on it because we don't know. We know that Barr, if he's looking at everything across the board, this is something that you have to look into. We go back to the fact that when Comey said, look, you know, having the counterintelligence investigation, you know, on the president and political campaign is just normal. And we went, really? And surveillance like this is normal? Really? Whoa. Wow. Maybe it was. Maybe we need to look into that if it was normal.
Right.
So when you look at everything that went on here, I know the Democrats are going to stick to obstruction of justice. You know, they're, you know, with the Mueller campaign, they're going to try to make the Mueller report, and they're going to try to make something out of that. They've dropped collusion completely because they know they have nothing. So that's what we're looking at. The obstruction of justice charge against Trump is another topic. We've had the discussion on it. We don't believe there's any obstruction of justice based on the way that the obstruction of justice law is written. If they wish to make it fine, that's a separate discussion. Collusion with the Russians to hack the election never happened. There was never any coordination. Mueller found nothing. That's what's being investigated here. The other thing is a separate topic that we can have a great discussion on, and we disagree with the Democrats on that completely. But that's a different discussion. And so when you look at that, everything that was said about Trump ended up being false. All the allegations, remember, from Brennan, John Brennan, all the allegations that he was making against the former CIA director against Donald Trump. Then the Mueller report comes out and says, oh, I must have had bad sources. Excuse me? Former CIA director? All your sources were wrong on this? All of them? You were wrong for over 2 years?
Right.
Everything you said was wrong? And so when you start looking at this, I don't know. I don't know precisely where to connect the dots here. I'm sure Barr has a better understanding of that. I don't know. I remember that Rand Paul said he believes that his campaign was investigated. I do remember that. I do know that, you know, Rand Paul has been pretty vocal on this, and he believes something was up. Again, I can't make that allegation. All I can do is ask the questions that we have asked, which are, if we know there was wrongdoing in the FBI and the intelligence agencies, if laws were broken in the unmasking, then you have to ask the question, if it was going on during the Obama administration at that point, you have to ask the question, how far did it go back? And so we have to ask the question then, when Admiral Rogers went to the FISA court right before the 2016 election and said, look, we're not following any of the rules and regulations that we had promised to do. And the FISA court then rebuked the Obama administration in April of 17, a few months later, for not following it. You have to ask the question at that point, well, if they were doing surveillance on the Trump campaign and using informants, if they were using if they were using a dossier, which was in essence Russian intelligence from Russian sources, and they were legitimizing it in order to get a secret warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. And right before the election, a member of the Obama administration went to the FISA court and said, hey, we haven't been following your rules and regulations. And they said, well, you haven't been following it. They rebuked them for violating Americans' rights, American citizens' rights. Well, then you have to ask yourself the question, who were they looking at that point? The Attorney General has to look and say, who were they? If they weren't, if they were breaking the law or breaking policy of the rules and regulations set down in the FISA court, because I don't know exactly who did what, so I cannot tell you whether who broke the law or who violated what the policy is of the FBI and the intelligence agencies. But then if you go back that far, then you have to sit there and ask yourself the question, is there a tie-in between everything and what happened that the FISA court rebuked the Obama administration for all the way back to 2012? And that's what Sarah Carter seems to be making this case from her intelligence sources.
2012, an election year. The question would be, all right, who, what were those incidents that the FISA court had concerns with? Then looking into those incidents, who did it involve? Who did any of that? You would get a list of individuals who were under surveillance or were unmasked. And then what do they have on that list? What do those individuals have in common? Because if you look at any of them that were, I mean, names are going to stick out very clearly. We talk about Rand Paul when Rand Paul says, well, you know, my name was on that list. All right, why? And who else was on the list? And that's where you start putting pieces of the puzzle together and establishing a pattern of behavior that could possibly go back to 2012 or even further. Robert Mueller, director of the FBI at the time. Because here's the question. If Mueller didn't, because Mueller didn't address the FISA court warrant in 2016
nope.
for Carter Page.
Nope.
Because what if he had? If he had, he would have had it quite possibly. That would be that one string on the sweater that goes all the way back to unravel everything back to the point where he was FBI director.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's...
Think about that. If he opened that door on Carter Page...
I believe that's one of the reasons he would not want to testify
exactly.
in public.
Exactly. Because he knows Republicans are going to be asking him questions about this. Why did you not look at the process itself? Did you examine the process of the application for the warrant on Carter Page? Both applications where we know that in the summer of 2016, that warrant was denied, and then it was issued in late October or in mid-October of 2016 when they included the dossier.
Well, I would have asked the question, why didn't you backtrack? I would lay it out. I'd say, Mr. Mueller, look. You know, your goal, you were told that your goal is to find out if the Trump campaign colluded with the Russians.
Right.
You know, to change the outcome of the election and any other crimes that might come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you went all the way to Manafort. You went to things that were completely outside of any type of Russian collusion. Yet we know today that if you would have followed it to the FISA warrant, which I would have gone to, looking for the best evidence possible. If you're asking me, if I'm a prosecutor and you ask me, look, you need to go after Trump for colluding with the Russians. Well, where am I going to go? The best evidence is in the FISA warrant that they used, you know, that whatever evidence they used to get the FISA warrant to spy in it must be pretty good probable cause. I'm going to go in right in that direction. And then after that, I'm going to ask, well, wait a minute. Where did this information come from the FISA warrant? Oh, it came from the Russians?
Right.
Really? Well, I'm concerned because I'm supposed to find if there's any type of Russian collusion and if Trump colluded with the Russians. But if it leads me to the fact that the Hillary campaign used Russian disinformation and propaganda in order to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election and use that propaganda disinformation to get a FISA warrant. Well, whoa, isn't that what I'm looking for?
Right.
So you ask that question, why didn't you go in that direction? And you make the great point. Does it because it goes all the way back to even when he was in office, if there is abuse of the FISA? Well, we know there's abuse of the FISA warrant system all the way back to when he was FBI director.
Right. And you can't start with Carter Page without going all the way back.
No, you can't know.
He ignored it completely.
Because remember, in the time span of where they weren't following the rules and regulations of the FISA court include the Carter Page warrant.
Yes.
And so it takes you all the way back to Mueller, who was FBI director when violations of the FISA warrant system were happening according to the FISA court.
Yes.
So what were they?
And
again, I'm not connecting the dots to saying they were all on Republican candidates. I'm saying that during the time that you were FBI director,
the FISA court had a concern.
The FISA court has rebuked the Obama administration and therefore the FBI and the Department of Justice, because you are the ones that submit the application to get the FISA warrants. He's rebuking you. Now, are they all related? That's what we don't know. She did a source story where they make the allegation.
Right.
It's about nearly a decade of abuse inside the intelligence community. But then again, we know that's true based on the FISA
documents.
On the FISA documents, why it was carried out to monitor communications of Americans inside the United States and the procedures meant to protect Americans were either swept up in those calls or targeted were not followed. The Fourth Amendment was under attack. And we know that's a case from the FISA court. Now, were they on Republicans? That's what we don't know.
Right.
But we do know that that is a huge thing that hopefully that there she is saying Barr's looking into. And that's why the president told the intelligence agencies to cooperate with Barr, because they haven't been cooperating with Barr. And so the order came down from the president. You have to do that. And he's got the ultimate say, at that point to order that. Be done. And there's no Mueller investigation going on.
Right.
So he can't be accused of obstruction of justice because he is trying to get to the truth in this matter.
Right.
Transparency. And you notice over the last couple of days, none of the Democrats want transparency now. Now it's all about you're going to destroy all of our top secrets. Here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
We're hearing that again.
Yes, which is an old tactic.
We didn't hear that. We didn't hear that when they were investigating Trump, did we?
No.
Except when the Republicans wanted to get something. It's like, well, we want transparency in our investigation, but we don't want transparency in the other investigation.
Right.
Well, we want transparency to know what happened in 2016 and even prior to that.
I think it was Sarah A. Carter on Twitter the other day. She wrote, and I'll have to make sure it was her, but she wrote, okay, we want transparency over here. Oh, no, 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 no. We don't. We definitely do not want transparency over here. And it's, basically the hypocrisy that goes on right now on Capitol Hill. It's been going on for ages on Capitol Hill. But in regards to this, there's one road, the truth.
Mm-hmm. And what a change, though. What a change in momentum over the last 3 weeks. I thought it was incredible yesterday, Comey doing the op-ed piece and that going, calling the president a liar. I'm like, what, where am I here?
Right.
All of a sudden, the roles are completely reversed.
Yes.
It's 180 from just a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Thanks so much for being here. Let's go to Jim in Detroit. Jim, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Good. How are you this evening?
Good.
Good. This has never been brought up. It's sort of a conspiracy theory, but I have not heard anybody bring this up. Could the possibility that there was a mole in the FISA court, and the FISA court was also in on the hoax?
Well, no, there's no evidence. There's no evidence of, I mean, that's, anything's always possible, but there's no evidence of that. The one concern there seems to be, even from the Trey Gowdy, side, is the fact that they were just willing to sign off based on the people that presented it. If law enforcement presented them the FISA warrant, they would sign off on it based on the people that were giving them the FISA warrant.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of times the evidence actually wasn't looked at by the actual court. We know that in the Carter Page one, there was no hearing.
Right.
It was just submitted.
Right.
To them. So that is there. But there is no evidence that the FISA court. Because remember, the FISA court judges are federal court judges.
Here is your forecast.
It's been an incredible stretch of severe weather for especially the nation's heartland, where over 300 tornadoes in the past 2 weeks have been reported. The setup today is still in place to see hail, high winds, potential severe thunderstorms from Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, down through northern Texas, where we'll see a pretty good likelihood for severe thunderstorms in and around the Dallas area. Earlier this year, some of the weather destruction came as a result of flooding, especially in the northern plains. With that flow moving downstream, we don't need any more rain for Arkansas, where the Arkansas River has crested in some areas. In and around Little Rock, there are reports of folks being on standby for evacuations. New York City today will see a high of 77 with a chance of showers. Chicago, thunderstorms and 70. Dallas, 85 with thunderstorms through the day. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Cool. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on the new Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. The new Gary McNamara, 86690.
Because the old Gary McNamara wasn't working.
The new old Gary McNamara.
Yeah.
What?
The old Eric Harley was a jerk. The all new.
We need to reboot the show.
New and improved. We need to unplug it for 10 seconds and plug it back in.
Yes.
Did you try unplugging it?
We have to do what the Democrat candidates are doing. We need to reintroduce ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that. I'm all for that. Reintroduce ourselves, and we'll start by apologizing for everything we did wrong the first time. Okay, the magazine thing, that was horrible. What I said here, that was horrible.
You heard Beto saying he had to apologize to his campaign staff?
Yeah.
For being such a blank.
Right.
Well, see, you know, the thing is, that's what happens. Yeah, that we said this. That's why Bernie Sanders had to unionize his campaign staff.
Right.
Because you cannot trust liberal socialists to treat their employees properly.
Right, right. Yeah.
As now O'Rourke has admitted. See, if they were unionized, everybody could have filed a union complaint.
It's just too easy these days. Come on, Bernie. That'd be so funny. The first thing they do is walk out, picket. What are you doing? Picketing. I'm the one that unionized you guys. Yeah, we don't care.
Well, that was yesterday.
Yeah.
Now you're the oppressor.
That's right. Now you're the boss.
See, that's why Bernie Sanders had to unionize. Now, O'Rourke, after O'Rourke said, look, I got to apologize for being a blank, then maybe he'll allow his staff to unionize because management was just out of control.
Right. Yeah.
So, they'd have to go on. Could you imagine that? Imagine that would, please. Oh.
Yeah, no, just.
Please make that happen.
Yeah, just
please,
make it happen.
Please make that happen. Please make, I would give anything for that. Because usually you don't need to have a union for a campaign staff because it's not a typical workplace.
Right, right.
It's where people who are supporting you will do anything for you, including volunteer for you, in order to become president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
No. Simply a business transaction.
That's right.
With the Bernie campaign.
If they go on strike, no one would want to cross the picket line.
We actually won't volunteer and support you. You must pay us, and then we'll pretend that we do. We will promote your socialism if you guarantee we will make more money and therefore we'll be capitalist pigs.
Right. Plus, we want a pension. It's only an 18-month job, but we want a pension.
Just remember that, though. Everybody was going, Bernie Sanders, you got to compliment him. See, he's the first presidential campaign to ever unionize his campaign. He cares.
No, it makes
a point. You can't trust a socialist.
No, you can't.
No employee could ever trust themselves to work for a socialist.
No.
Look, already O'Rourke's had to apologize to his campaign for treating them like crap.
Right. You know?
I'm telling you.
Can you imagine? This is about as entertaining as it gets. The whole having to, we're going to reboot. We're going to reboot. Yeah, good luck with that. Because rebooting is going to skyrocket your poll numbers, right? We know a reboot is going to, we're going to pretend like no one saw the first time. That's really what that is. We're going to pretend like none of that stuff ever happened. We're going to reintroduce. What does reintroduce?
Means re-apologize.
Right. Okay. We did it wrong the first time.
I still think that's the most amazing thing going on is the apology. The apologizing.
Right. And everyone is having to do it with few exceptions here. But at some point, they'll all have to do it.
Is Biden going to have to apologize eventually?
He kind of did with the creepy gate.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry you guys aren't into that. that's basically... sorry you're not in the mood. I mean, that was basically the brunt of his apology.
Sorry I destroyed hashtag me too.
Yeah, that's right. I really hate to destroy an entire movement with one presidential bid, but, here it goes. And that was it. And then the guy disappears. He totally disappears.
The Politico covered that article saying that he may be the most popular, but he can't draw a crowd.
Right.
And maybe we asked who of them can
draw a crowd. I'm telling you, when it goes back to Panama City Beach, Florida, only because I had it on while I was doing some things in the office there at the house. And I thought, you know, I've never really tuned in to an entire rally by the president, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he posted it on social media, and it was the following day. And so I thought, you know what? Let's watch it. And it has him from the moment he walks out, shaking hands, going up to the podium, making some jokes. And that crowd was energized. Show me the energized crowd right now on the left.
I mean, you've seen some applause when they promise you something, but you don't
you do not have
the energy. And this is something that we haven't talked about, you know, the excitement level. But when you see the energy that is still at a Trump rally,
mm-hmm.
comparing it even to an Obama rally, you know, after, you know, there might have been polite applause. There was nothing like the insanity that goes on at a Trump rally.
Right, right.
I mean, it's still fresh and brand new.
Right. It is.
It really is.
You're right. No, you're absolutely right. And that's the, that's a great point, because Biden, let's just say he's anything but fresh and brand new. But, I mean, you would think, as the guy that's getting all the numbers right now, at least for the moment, that there would be energy at the two stops that he's made so far, however many it is. You would think there would be something. I mean, just consider this. I know it's very early, but he's the guy that the left and the polls say can beat Trump. He's the guy that could be the reason that Trump won't be president for two terms. That in and of itself should be the draw, right?
Yes.
That should be the energy.
Yeah.
I mean, the moment they say collusion, corruption, obstruction, any of these things, people start foaming at the mouth on the left. But you look at the one way without really having to go through the courts or anything else that could end the Trump presidency, and it's Biden, and he doesn't carry that energy. Why is that? Can any of them carry that energy? Look, maybe it comes together in the summer of next year, leading up to the convention, when whoever it is becomes the presumptive nominee. But I wonder if it's going to be there. When you look at the president's energy at a rally, I mean the crowd's energy at a rally, it's clear. I mean, you can see it. When he's walking out, you can see people, they're motivated. I don't see that on the left. I don't see it yet.
No, you make a great case, because the article was talking about the fact that, you know, Biden still can't draw a crowd,
right?
And that's because he doesn't bring out that sense of excitement of something new, and the cult like status being so early in a primary. But I think you make a better point, that the countering point to that is, yes, but he is the guy that only is there and only has the dominant lead because he is the one that Democrats believe can beat Trump. That in itself should have Biden rallies with people hanging off the walls going crazy, especially yes. with the lead that he has. And to me, if I'm Biden, I'm telling that to, you know, I'm raising money, but I'm telling that to everybody on my staff. Look, I'm the guy. The only reason I'm here is not because of what I believe in, because nobody knows what I believe in, because I haven't said anything yet, because you've all advised me not to take an opinion on anything because it could hurt me in the polls. But we need to have rallies that are like Trump's.
Yeah, right.
I need excitement. I don't know how you people, that's what I'd be telling my staff. I don't know how you people do it, but, you know, we need, as far as I'm concerned, wouldn't you as a candidate, I'd say, look, I'm worried. When I see the energy, if I'm Biden, I'm putting myself in Biden. And again, I've never run for political office before.
Right.
But after reading that Politico article saying that, you know, the crowds and the excitement just isn't there when he's out there speaking, it's polite applause, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'd be saying as Biden. I'd be saying, you people need to make this. We need to make this. If I truly have a 20-point lead, if the vast plurality want me to be president of the United States, we can't let this continue. We've got to make every single thing that we do, make it sound more exciting. I don't think it's possible, but that's
right.
what I'd say.
Right.
More exciting than a Trump rally. Thing is, you can't. Here's the problem. You can't, because it's not genuine.
It's not.
And so this is a great question to ask. Is, when people say, okay, we want Biden because he can win, well, are they saying it like that? Or is it, yeah, okay, I got to go for Biden because
right,
he can win?
You know, cross our fingers.
You know,
right.
Biden's probably the best choice, you know, to to beat Trump. Oh, geez, he's probably the only guy that can beat Trump. So that's the tone in how they're saying it, the emotion. Right. It's not, we got the guy that can beat Trump and take him out of office.
Yes. I mean, because
that's not being said in that exciting
way. No, it's not. And even Biden's not saying it in that way. Think about this. You'd be shouting at the top of your lungs, we will defeat him.
Yes.
Look at the polls. We'll defeat. And you just repeat that because you just hit on something a moment ago. And I was thinking about it earlier. The president's bullhorn is bigger than any that I've seen in modern years in terms of, you know, the huge political bullhorn. But it's not just the showman in the president, which there's some of that at work. It's about the very fundamentals. Border security, good economy,
yes, it is.
Jobs being created.
Yes, it is.
All of these things that are actually happening, by the way, they're no longer political promises. They're accomplishments now. So he stands on a record. His bullhorn is huge. I don't know that you can have a bigger bullhorn if you're on the left.
And even though he hasn't got everything that he has wanted to, and a lot of people believe that he conceded on the wall, still his base believes, and the vast majority of people that voted for him last time still believe, well, yeah, but he's president. He can't do it alone, but there is no better guy to be in there to still push that issue.
Right. You look at the numbers, the economy's doing great. And
we said that afterwards, after the Ann Coulter faction of the Trump of the Trump support said, well, he's lost our support completely because he didn't win this. And we said, well, he's not going to win every battle, but there is no general out there. If you're looking at politics as a political war, there is no political general out there that you can look at in that party and say, this person will fight as hard as Trump has, even if he lost a battle for some immigration enforcement, which was the wall.
Right.
But there's still no better person out there to do it. We said it at the time. It's stupid for those people to walk away from him, and we'll see whether they actually will come 2020.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, when we talk about the campaign, you know, in the political article about Biden's campaign, you know, not really generating a lot of excitement, even if they lead in the polls and really can't draw a crowd, you would think that that's the only thing that I'd be saying if I was Biden to my staff. I need to be out there just screaming, I'm the guy to beat Trump.
Right.
That's all you got to do. You don't got to.
We will win.
You don't have to talk about any issue whatsoever.
Nope. You don't.
But you've got to be at those. You have to be at those rallies, and that's what you say. And when the debates come up, look, there's going to be so many people on stage. You don't have to say much. You're not going to be forced to say much.
Right. You're going to have to also get somebody that's going to bring some energy to the campaign. I mean, I'm not talking about a deep pick just yet. A little early for that. But some endorsements somewhere. Find them.
Yeah.
Find them and bring them to that stage.
Oh.
What's exactly. That's the question, right?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.